We are happy to announce that this episode of the SW Show is partially brought to you by Humble Bundle. Well, not really. We are part of the Humble Bundle referral program, and we just wanted to say that if you like really cheap games and maybe helping charity pending the Humble thing going on, all you have to do is go to humblebundle.com/?partner equals SWW. That's right, humblebundle.com/?partner equals SWW. And you just do your normal stuff, and it just kind of helps us get a couple bucks here and there. Maybe it helps AJ get his lights. Maybe it's my camera. Maybe we actually pay Corey for helping us out. But again, if you're going to go buy games anyway, it might be worth checking out.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Movie Club, where Mike and I are talking about Alex Garland's final film, supposedly.
Pew, 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 pew.
That's Civil War, though.
It is Civil War. Where should we begin with? Let's start with the honest thing we all need to talk about before we talk about our opinions of this film.
What's that?
The lines he gave the Civil War might be the most unrealistic lines any foreigner has ever tried to give American war of all time.
California and Texas.
California and Texas. But like even beyond that, I'm gonna pull up the map as we're talking here. Just to see war map.
I was gonna say there was a map, right, that they show.
There we go. Okay. Here we go. So we have the Florida and Texas is one of them, right? As we just talked about. We have the Florida Alliance, which looks like Oklahoma. Basically on the north parts there, you go directly east, up to Tennessee, and it comes down to Florida, kind of creates an alliance there. You have the Loyalist states, which is going to be basically everything besides the Pacific Northwest and going one down. It's weirder to me because even like separate Minnesota from the Midwest, but then you like keep the Midwest whole together. Also the Florida Alliance stuff feels like it would be Florida and then the rest of the Deep South. I don't think, let's be honest, Florida would be like 50 states at this point, too.
Yeah, I mean,
we're like New Mexico with Washington, D.C. Are we going to be objective here? That's not going to stay together.
No. Yeah. Like, so is just New Mexico getting steamrolled by the Californian military?
That's what I mean. The New Mexico and Arizona would be gone in 20 seconds with California and Texas fighting between them. Like, of course, Texas just wipe through them and be like, okay, now we have four states. That's what I'd picture the map looking like.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of the way that they handle the conflict that isn't really well explained. But also when you think about what this movie is about, right? It's not about necessarily the sides,
mm-hmm.
because the movie is all about war journalists and what they have to endure. And first off, I just gotta say, Kirsten Dunst nailed this role.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she is so far the one believable 2000s female star that can play the everywoman.
She like the only one, do you think? Like, do you think she's the only one?
I think it helped that she kind of not fell off the face of the planet, but did her own thing.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like everybody else from that time stayed famous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, well, there's no way Jennifer Aniston could play an every woman because it's Jennifer Aniston.
Right.
Right. You know, there's very few from that era that were as successful as Kirsten Dunst that could, in today's age, play an every woman.
Yeah.
So her role as Lee it's very interesting because the the character arc of it is one that I think I expected, but didn't expect so suddenly. Right, where it's like everything snaps after meeting Jesse Plemons and he kills, what, two? Or three?
Two,
and he's going to kill
the third.
The videographer, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then he gets taken out.
Mm-hmm.
I'll admit, when there's the sniper scene, I don't know who's on what side in that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right, like, it's one of those cool things where stuff like that would happen in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Where people that are just anti both sides are just going to start taking out as many as they can.
And no, that part I feel like that part I'd give is a very realistic part.
And it's a great scene, too. Like, it really showcases kind of the tension of a counter sniping mission.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think I broadly agree with what you're saying. The part I would kind of agree with the film is, I think, I don't know how strong a choice I still think that going through the journalist eyes is for this film. Like, I don't think you need to be a soldier, but I almost feel like the journalist part, like, was a weird, like, main plot choice to follow. And, like, especially, like, their mission was just to get, like, footage. Versus, like, feel like anything, like, bigger than that.
Well, I think, too, right, like, part of what makes it work as journalists is they're not, you know, they are nonpartisan. They don't care who wins and who loses. Which, you know, these war journalists, that's exactly what it is, right? They don't care what side's coming out on top. They just want to get the story. So I think if you look at it from that point of, the characters there are not there to pick sides. And I think, oddly enough, Lee explaining to, is her name Jesse, I think?
Mm-hmm.
Explaining to Jesse that your job is not to pick sides. Right? Your job is to tell the story. And I think the fact that, you know, you see that when they go on that mission with the rebels.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that shot, the photo that they show, is such a good photo.
No, that's cool. There's cool shots. I just have a problem to believe it as, like, a main plot like this. I go, it feels always stronger when you have someone being like, this is a life or death situation, or, like, something's happening, where this both feel like, I'm not sure, like, why this is the most interesting story there.
I mean, it's just a story that's not told.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like, you could see 1,000 versions of this movie where it's following a soldier. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the same storyline of,
yep, it's true.
You know, a young soldier signs up to be part of the Western Alliance and gets partnered up with, you know, a grizzled vet or something like that.
Mm-hmm. You know,
the story could stay the same. The very basic plot points, right? Of the student becomes the master.
Mm-hmm.
And just do it from different perspectives. I just don't think anyone would have chosen the journalist perspective. So I think the fact that he went about and did that is very impressive, because so many things are going against the idea of making a movie about the journalists in a war. Right, like that's never sexy. It's not sexy to follow along a photojournalist that's, you know, strung out on gas station coffee, cigarettes, and, you know, who knows what else with 2 hours of sleep. Like, that's not sexy. It's like, okay, whatever, like, they're a bum, kind of. I do think they could have handled the aspect of, you know, it felt like it was a true war where the journalists were treated as non-combatants, right? Which is mm-hmm. the rules of war is like you don't shoot journalists. Now, if they're collateral, they're collateral. But it's a war crime to shoot a journalist. So I feel like I wish they could have leaned on it more of them in the conflicts. But I get the idea of like they were pushing to the front line, so they were already in occupied territory.
And like those rules always get super weird, even actual wars too, because like the practicality is like it's really easy to make anything collateral damage, and especially like I understand the theory of it, but especially if it's like the enemy's journalist coming through at a certain point, like I hate to say what do you expect, but like there's a certain level of like I used to watch stuff, I go, I'm not saying you wanna die.
Oh, I was fully expecting when they showed the embedded journalists, I was fully expecting to see one of them get murked. Because, I mean,
it's always just one of those where I go, you don't want to, but like you have to understand the risk signing up for these jobs.
I mean, they were in fatigues, you know, they were in. The only thing that made them not look like soldiers was their black Kevlar that said press on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's not usually what you would do. You would wear something bright.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want everyone to see that you're there. So, you know, it's the unfortunate reality of at times the cheapest Kevlar is the black Kevlar.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't, you know, when you're operating on a budget like you would be as a freelance journalist, sometimes you're stuck with wearing the black, and unfortunately, you know, a lot of militaries also use black, so you need to find a way to differentiate yourself, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you think about the rules of war, the sad reality is current wars aren't fought with the rules of war.
Yeah.
Right, like, look at the conflicts going on right now. Ukraine, Russia,
mm-hmm.
they're not following the rules of war. Hamas, Israel, I mean, that's a terrorist organization. Ethiopian invasion, they're just invading for territory, so they don't care. You know, I think in a world where traditional militaries aren't standing off the way that they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, when was the last time that you had traditional militaries? The Korean War, probably.
No, it'd be more recent. Stuff like Yugoslavia, probably. That'd probably be the way I'd put it. That one's a bit more like that one felt like that. And especially if you look, it kind of evolved. Like, yeah, but that'd probably be the last one I'd put it as. Even, like, Bosnia and stuff was revolution.
Yeah. And to a lesser extent, I mean, the Yugoslav stuff was a revolution in the sense of they were being led by.
Yeah, but I think that was different than other ones.
So, you know, the rules of war don't apply anymore.
No, that's true.
So, I think to make a movie where the rules of war are very much heavily implied that they still exist is interesting. Because I'm of two minds of the runtime of this film. It was about 90 minutes. I'm of two minds of that. One, I like it because too many movies are over 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked this movie to have been a little bit longer, so we maybe could have seen, you know, Lee on assignment in one of these African nations or in the Middle East or something, right? Like, there's shots, there's little sequences where you get it, but I think establishing Lee's kind of seniority or aura or whatever you want to call it, right? Everybody clearly respects her. It would be nice if we were introduced to maybe why.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because I think, you know, her breaking down as they're invading the White House. Right. I wish it was explained more of, was this her broken because she saw two of her friends die? Or was this broken because she was watching her country die?
Yeah, they don't, like, that's my thing too. They feel too self-congratulating in the sense of you'd rather it be like, what's the bigger meaning of why you're there?
And to see, I will say, to see the arc of Jesse go from the one breaking down and saying, you know, I didn't even take a photo with the car wash.
Mm-hmm.
To her being the one taking the photo of the president getting assassinated. That arc is really, it was predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, of course, like, right, that's how it's going to end. I didn't think Lee dying to save her wasn't how I had it in my book.
Really?
Of how the story was going to end. I thought for sure, like, I figured Lee would be hindered, thus Jesse gets the shot of the president dying. But I didn't think you would have her dying to save her until she steps out and you're like, oh, somebody's getting smoked here, whether it's Jesse or Lee. Somebody's getting smoked. But
no, that's true.
Also, think about the practicality of, okay, the separatist forces take over the air bases.
Mm-hmm.
The DOD has kill switches on everything.
Or in some capacity, yeah. Like, I feel like, especially like the major bases.
Like, you're trying to tell me separatist forces are just flying F-35s like it's no big deal?
I think most of the ships, they have kill switches. I don't know if they have it for, like, the probably as base stuff as much. But
there's got to be software in those jets that they can remote shut them down. You're trying to tell me that there's not?
No, that would agree. But do you think they don't have an ability to probably start those offline? That's the question.
I don't know. Yeah, that would be the thing. Like, could you start an F-35 in a Faraday cage
and get it running? Then at that point, and then it can't connect or whatever, stop the connection.
I mean, it would still try to reconnect, so you'd have to kill the radio somehow, but...
Sure, but, like, is that a thing in quotes they could do, is the question.
Yeah, you also don't really know how long everything's been happening, because you're kind of thrown into it. So maybe there is just, like, the DOD doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, before we wrap this up, I love that they did the Lady Liberty for the suicide bomber.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
That was such a cool, like, as it was happening, I'm like, okay, there, it's going to be a suicide bomber. But the fact that they did the Lady Liberty image was so cool. I was like, because that is such a such an important painting for the time frame that the U.S. was in at the time.
Mm-hmm.
A very young nation, you know, fending for its life. And this incredible painting of Lady Liberty with a big fucking flag leading the way. You know, being produced and being one of those images that it's not as popular as I would hope it would be today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the Manifest Destiny painting gets a lot more play. Partially because there's a tit out, but
I think that's probably the one that like people probably know more.
Yeah. But having that image portrayed, I thought was really cool. You know, some of the some of the subtleties of imagery throughout the film. I think really other than the scene where Jesse Plemons is dumping civilian bodies, right? I understand why they had that, because that's the scene where Lee snaps.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you could have handled getting to that a lot different.
Yeah.
I feel like it didn't, I feel like they didn't need a mass grave of civilians to be.
You know, reminded me of Homefront when it did like the Homefront scene and like that. And like,
I can see that.
I still think that might be the piece of media that's done it one of the best, just because like the way that like it actually felt like they put you in it and stuff. Or if like in action movies, you're harder to put the camera in the right angle.
Well, and not only that, I just feel like you could have done it better where you still kill one of the journalists.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in DC. Right. Have it be the videographer. God, I forget what his character name is, but the guy, the actor is amazing. He does a lot of really good stuff. Have him just get gunned down in the street. Mm-hmm. And then that's where Lee snaps. You see what I mean? I don't feel like we needed that scene to be the scene where she breaks.
No, that's very true.
Because it really serves no purpose, the scene, other than getting Lee to snap. And, oh, by the way, you know, our guy from the New York Times is shot and is dying.
Yeah. So as we wrap this up, where would we rank this, you think, on Alex Garland's, like, level? Like, I think X Machina is still his best work, and I'm assuming
Prometheus
does not break through it.
I think in terms of movies I would watch repeatedly, this is higher than Ex Machina.
Well, would you think it's a better film? Like, I think you might think it's more fun film, right?
Well, not even fun. It's just, it's weird to say it's a lighter material.
But I think you're right, because I think it leans into fiction more. Like
the existential crisis.
And that one tries to lean out of fiction.
The existential crisis of Ex Machina, where you're like, oh dear God, like, we are that close. The world's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that aspect of dread of Ex Machina is why I only watch it, like, maybe once a year or less. Whereas I'll go watch Civil War as soon as it's on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like, it's a clean 90, 95 minutes out the door. So, yeah. I would recommend it.
I think you're right. I think I have more problems with it than you, but I think I'd recommend it too.
I would recommend it because I wouldn't tell anyone, don't go see it.
That's fair. I don't know if I'd recommend this, like, telling everyone to go see it, but, like,
right.
If you're already going to, I wouldn't stop you. I wouldn't be like, you're wasting your money.
If somebody asked me, hey, have you seen Civil War? Should I go see it? I would say, I mean, it's all right. Right. It's not a, you absolutely have to go see this. It's not like Iron Claw, right? Where, well, Iron Claw is you need to know the person before you say, hey, go see this. But, you know, it's not like, what's a good example of one where I've spent head over heels, been like, yes, you have to go see this. We've had a few recently where I've felt that way. I'm trying to remember what we did.
When you saw like John Wick 4.
Yeah, I mean, John Wick is like, it's fun. Who cares? It's just fun. Whereas this is like, okay, you know, do you want to feel, but not really?
Mm-hmm. You want like a mindless, you feel deep film.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Like you're not actually going deep, but you feel like you went deep.
Yeah, the film covers a heavy subject of the American Civil War.
But I think they have it very lightly enough where it just becomes pop culture. Yeah,
the future American Civil War, I should say. But yeah, it's not covering anything too deep. I mean, especially because it covers it from the journalist perspective. I think, honestly, this would have been a great setting to do a show in.
Yeah, I think you get more out of it.
A la Generation Kill, where you follow the journalist from town to town. Because I would have loved to have seen them on the other side. Right, I would have loved to have seen them as working with the loyalists. Because I think that would have been a good 20 minutes to add to the film to make it 2 hours.
You know, see like two such journalists that come together or something. But like they knew each other, they both split off somehow and they
yeah, or even if it was like, you know.
No, imagine if the back 20 was like a recapping of the film, but like from the other side, since the other journalist was.
That could be interesting. Leading up to the
reconnection.
Well, leading up to when they storm the White House.
Right. But like, that's what I'm saying. You lead up, yeah. Like, that's what it is. It's...
Yeah, that could be cool. But alas, they did not do that. And Alex Garland is going out on not a high note, but not a bad note.
And acceptable enough. Like
if this is truly his final film.
That's we'll wait and see. He might retire for a few years. He's going to pull the, like, Owie back route. My money is that man's back at some point.
Yeah, somebody, Netflix will throw a gajillion dollars at him. And...
yeah, he might not, like, be mainstream again, or he might like, come in, like, once or twice back his career, but he'll be back. I don't think it's over.
Yeah. He'll be back. We'll be back.
And we will see all of you next time.
Will you be back?
The SW Show and all of its affiliate podcasts are podcast by me, Mike Maroney, and AJ Losey, sometimes by our contributors, including Corey King. You can follow the SW Show on social media at the SW Show, or sooner or later you go to patreon.com/SWW to help us out. Thank you, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.